And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, there's been a hell of a change in the campaign, hasn't there, in the last 10 days?
Well, that's an understatement.
That's an understatement. That's right. Do you recall anything quite so dramatic?
No. I mean, the replacement of Tom Eagleton with Sergeant Shriver kind of pales in comparison with this.
Because it didn't really change the nature of the campaign. But here, you had a campaign that all the Democrats were dreading and weren't interested in taking part in, and all of a sudden, it's a real campaign.
Yeah, and it's a sprint at this point. It's a sprint. But all of this, I think, pent-up desire to have a meaningful choice, as people perceived it, has been let loose. And we see it in the not only the size of the crowds, but the enthusiasm of the crowds and the overall atmosphere of the crowds.
It's beyond the crowd, there are people actually volunteering. That wasn't happening.
Right, right. I'll just say that you hear the word joy being used a lot in this campaign. But, you know, you talk about people volunteering. This week, an office, it was the Biden office, but now it's the Harris office, it opened in downtown Scranton. And my wife and I took the opportunity to stop by. Now, it's not in a very easy-to-find location. It's on the fifth floor of an office building. But we went in, and it's really typical of these campaign offices that you see in presidential campaigns, where you have young people manning them as volunteers, or I don't know if they're whatever they're getting paid, but they had a young lady from Kentucky and a young gentleman from New York as the volunteers. They were really thrilled to see us. I think we were maybe one of the first people to stop by. But the guy running the office is local. He's from Dalton or Waverly, somewhere about that. From what I understand, the Biden folks had opened an awful lot of local offices around the country. And the Trump people don't have any of this. They're running strictly a media type of base campaign.
Well, I think I saw that Trump said that it wasn't the job of the party to get out the vote. He'll get out the vote. It's right. Their job to get the vote counted and make sure there's no cheating. Now, that strikes me as a very dopey approach, but I'm all for it on their part, but it strikes me as a very dopey approach. Since, after all, there isn't that much cheating, and if they're out there to suppress the vote, which is exactly what it'll come down to, I doubt that they'll be able to do it in large enough numbers to make the difference. And finally, I'm not sure he can get out the vote.
Well, I mean, we should know by now that when he says we're going to stop the cheating, what it means is we're going to try to cheat like hell.
Right, that's right.
And they've placed people in the last 4 years around the country into positions where they can cheat. One of the biggest things that they're planning to do is not certify the elections on local levels. You might remember that last time there was one county in Michigan wherein the commissioners who are supposed to certify the vote deadlocked, and they weren't going to certify it. And if the counties aren't certified, then the state can't certify. And if the state can't certify, then Biden can't get those votes. But, you know, there is litigation type of stuff that can be done. Pennsylvania, there was that one county that didn't want to certify, and I believe it's costing the county an awful lot of money to have gone down that road. But that's only one of the things that they're planning to do. We know the regular tricks of the trade that they've done all over the years. Remember, William Rehnquist used to stand outside of polling places where there were a lot of natives, Native Americans voting, and try to intimidate. That goes back into the 70s and 80s. They're just all sorts of things about where they're going to, you know, where they're going to put polling places and the type of things that they, that the tricksters used to use in places, but on steroids, By the way, I caught a blurb. I haven't read the book, but there's a new book out called Anti-Democratic by a fellow named David Daley, D-A-L-E-Y. And his thesis seems to be that this is destroying or distorting the vote in favor of Republicans has been a life's work of John Roberts, among others, ever since he was in the Justice Department and worked his way up to now where he's the Chief Justice. Remember, it was Roberts who wrote the opinion that did away with Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act when he declared that there's no reason now
anymore.
Yeah, we don't have any discrimination anymore. Upon which all of the Republican-controlled states started passing laws and procedures that discriminated or made it unfairly. So I'm getting a little far afield here, but I do
not
want to...
Not too. This is their plan. Yeah. This is their plan. This is why the Republicans at the moment don't have any field operation, really. It's because they've diverted all their money into hiring lawyers and other people who will do what you're talking about.
Yeah.
They've made that clear.
Yeah. The Democrats have Mark Elias, who's gone around and been very successful around the country. But if you don't control the judges and you don't control the party officials, you can get some really bad results. As we see with someone like Eileen Cannon. Although in 2020, a lot of judges who were Republican judges and Trump judges wouldn't go along with the charade that the election was stolen. But Trump is still going on that, still claiming the election was stolen.
Well, if you say that the real weight of the Republican campaign is going to be rigging the election and spending their money to make sure they have a way so that the Republican judges are the ones who decide whose votes will get counted and whose votes will not get counted, then it makes sense that they don't really have much of a get-out-the-vote operation or that they don't have much of a campaign.
Right.
Because that's not really what they care about. They don't want the vote. They don't care about the vote. They'd like to get the vote, but that's not critical.
And we keep saying this, but it goes back to what Nancy McLean said about the 1980 election, when the Koch brothers realized that their libertarian philosophy was not popular and could never really be enacted, so that they decided to try to get it through by other means.
Right.
And they've worked and they've worked and they've worked on that.
Right.
And they're still trying to, you know, those things. You know, it's been said, if your policies and the way you present them are not winning elections, and remember, the Republicans have only won the popular vote in one election since, 1992? that what used to be was the parties would go back and reflect and change some of their policies. Now that doesn't happen. They say, we're going to continue on our losing policies, but we're going to shove them down your throat. And that's their game plan here. you remember when the autopsy that the Republicans did after Mitt Romney lost and said, you've got to be more welcoming to minorities and to women. And the Republicans said, well, thank you very much. Now just throw that in the wastebasket and we're going to double down. And right. That's what they've been doing.
That's right. That's right.
So all this comes together. There's a thread that keeps coming together.
And it's interesting that the Democrats have, and the leadership of the Democrats, have been somewhat spooked by the Republicans. They are constantly reacting as if that the GOP and the Trump people have some mysterious power, some great connection with a mass of voters that is unchallengeable and it can't be coped with. And basically, they help the Republicans build up the feeling about the Republicans that they're unbeatable machine, a tank, just rolling down, crushing stalks of corn that get in the way.
That's the authoritarian playbook as to the perception of power and strength.
Yeah, but it's all phony.
Yes, and that's what's different with the Harris-Walz campaign, is they're not playing into that stuff. They're out there playing a different game. They're playing their own offensive game. They're out there, as I said, with joy and being on the offense and engaging people and energizing people. And Donald Trump looks at this, and he looks at the crowds that he no longer gets in certain places, and that he's no longer the star, and he can't handle this.
He has no way, and the people around him haven't come up with a way to handle the fact that they're not running against Biden. And yet, it would strike me that any junior high school kid would have said, well, let's have a plan B, just in case. But they didn't seem to think they needed a plan B. And when Biden stepped out, they immediately reacted by being at a loss, and they haven't gotten any further along.
Their whole campaign
seems to be built on a foundation of sand. They are what the Tsar, Catherine the Great, created a Potemkin village, a facade of something that doesn't really exist, a billboard, a picture of an apartment house, but it's just a picture.
Well, she didn't create it. It was created in order to fool her.
Yeah, to fool her in her days. That's right. Yeah, and she had a tour of this province. She went up and down the river, and the river was filled with prosperous villages, but none of them were actual villages. They were just the representation of villages. She never got off the boat, so she didn't inspect anything. That's what the Republicans are. That's what the Trump campaign is. Blow, and they fall down. Now, that's not to say that there aren't a lot of fanatic fascists who support Trump and sometimes are even unhappy with the fact that he's not fascist enough. They're a very small minority. They're big in terms of their appearance, in terms of their big talk, in terms of the publicity they get. But the truth of the matter is they're a small percentage of the population, and there's no particular reason why anybody should be feared of them.
Right, you have to pay attention, but you shouldn't.
But you shouldn't let them spook you.
No, well, that's why this word "weird" has gotten such traction, because it essentially denigrates them.
Yeah,
and they have no response to that because they are weird.
Trump talked about Biden. He wasn't able to finish a sentence. He didn't remember what he was talking. Did you ever read any of Trump's statements, or did you ever actually listen to them? Yeah. They're illogical. It's not that he lies. It's that he lives in a complete dream world that he's made up. He may even believe it. He may not be lying. He may believe it.
Yeah, you don't know what's worse. I mean, if you were a psychologist and had him on the couch, you don't know what is worse, whether he knows the difference or whether he doesn't know the difference.
And plus, which his sentence structure is not English. If you had to parse the sentence to say this is what he meant, you wouldn't be able to do it. You think Biden didn't speak properly? This guy doesn't speak properly, not in English anyway.
No, but people were all concentrated on Biden and his flubs. And now the field is open. The only one making flubs is Donald Trump.
That's right. And he can't help it. He can't help it. He's an ignorant man who doesn't know grammar, who doesn't know how to think clearly, who never has, who always bullied his way through. And when you're a bully, it doesn't matter what you say. You're just a bully. Pay attention to him. You have to know that this guy, he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. He's living in a dream world. Yeah, he can't do what he wants to. What he says he wants to do, not because he doesn't pay attention to detail, but because the world isn't what he says it is.
Right, right. But his people believe it's what he says it is. That's the problem.
Right, and that gets to the point that his people are a small group. Yeah, they believe it. Okay. Fantastic. There are snake handlers in Tennessee, in southeastern Tennessee, who believe that the way to worship Jesus is to put your hand into a box full of poisonous snakes. If you don't get bit, that shows you're on Jesus' side. And if you do get bit, that shows the devil has possessed you. They believe it. So what? Very few people put their hands in that pit.
Well, we're seeing, though, you know, when you talk about percentages, we're seeing the polls. And for the last couple of weeks, we saw this gradual shift in the polls when Harris replaced Biden toward Harris. But this weekend, there's a set of polls out from the New York Times that in the three big blue wall battleground states, our state, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, that all three have Harris up 50 to 46. And, I've talked about one of the important things is if you break that 50% barrier.
Right.
And she seems to have broken it. Trump was getting close to the 50% barrier. You saw polls 48, 46 for him, 49, 48 for him. But now his numbers are being deflated. And, you know, 46, 40, you know, his ceiling has always seemed to be between 45 and 47. And that's where he is right now. That's where he is. And the question is that where he's going to stay? Could he be going down even further, farther? We don't know. But we know which way the momentum is. And as one of the Bushes, I don't know whether it was the father or the son, said, the Big Mo.
The father said that.
Yeah. Oh, remember, what was it, Joe Lieberman, Joe Mentum?
Joe Mentum, right. Yeah. Well, that's the point. That's the point. Once you begin to see the fraud behind the asserted strength of the Republican campaign and the Republican machine, once you see that, and you liberate yourself from being intimidated by it, you have a chance of liberating the majority of the population who have, you know, at the, you have to say that they sort of saw what was coming with dread anticipation, but without any understanding of how to avoid it. And now there's a way to avoid it, because here's a group of people who say, wait a minute, forget about these guys. They don't have the strength they say they have. They don't have the support they say they have. There's no reason to feel pessimistic about it. They may be even weird people. But whether or not they're weird, there's more of us. And people are responding to that. That's the point.
Yeah. People, and we've said this about the rural parts of Pennsylvania, people have to know that there are people like us out there. And they're not as isolated. And that coming out, even though you won't win the county, but coming out and cutting the margins is a worthy endeavor.
It's a vital endeavor. If we cut the rural margin that the Republicans in Pennsylvania have exercised, if we cut it by 5%, and the normal Democratic vote turns out in Philadelphia and in Pittsburgh, not to mention Harrisburg, if that happens, and just 5% shift in the 42 rural counties, there's no way that the Republicans can win the national election. No way, not in Pennsylvania. And if they don't get Pennsylvania, they have no way to win.
Yeah, and what usually happens is that once the undecideds break, and sometimes it's the final weekend before November 5th, they all seem to break in the same direction. You very rarely see the undecideds just sort of scattered around. It just becomes an overall environment on that. Now, of course, we no longer have just an election day. We have an election season.
Right.
And that's going to be starting in a month or so.
Right.
So the Democrats...
And Trump, who opposed early voting, is now desperately trying to figure out a way to get his people to vote early. But they already listened to him. They already know they shouldn't vote early.
Right. He's not going to change their minds.
No.
And he's doing other self-destructive things, like down in Georgia when he's attacking Brian Kemp, the very popular governor. And not only Kemp, he's attacking Kemp's wife. And Kemp is having none of that. He's not like Ted Cruz, who, you know, swallows it and kisses Trump's ring. I don't know which way Kemp is going to go, but
Kemp endorsed Trump. And yesterday, Kemp said, "I'm supporting the Republican candidate. Doesn't matter if who he is or whether I don't like him, but he's the Republican candidate. He's better than Biden."
Yeah, well, but Biden's not
running.
And, you know, there's endorsements, and then there's endorsements. Is he really going to work hard for him? That is something that that remains to be seen. We already know that Kemp's former running mate, the lieutenant governor, former lieutenant governor Jeff Duncan, has come out and said, I'm voting for Harris. And I don't know what kind of pull he has. I don't think he has much. But, excuse me. But at least there's some of that wing.
He doesn't need to have much. All he needs to be is another rivulet in the stream of people who are saying that this Trump machine is not what it's cracked up to be, not what it claims to be. And when you get people that nobody knows but who occupy positions in the middle of that machine who say, "I'm not part of this," that puts the lie to the claims of Trump.
Well, so it's
quite significant.
The Trump machine is something like a Model A Ford. You know,
the Trump machine is like a mafia organization with his relatives running it. That's what it is, right?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, they took over the Republican Party lock, stock, and barrel.
Yeah.
Or Trump said, "My only job is to elect Donald Trump."
Yeah.
When traditionally the job of the RNC chair is to elect Republicans, not just a president. And we'll see how that works out as each state results are tabulated. It's still going to be tough for the Democrats to get the Senate, but it's possible. That's one reason that Trump was in Montana yesterday. That could, you know, election night could come down to that state.
Could. But Arizona is very interesting. In the poll this weekend, Carrie Lake is down 11 points to Ruben Gallegos.
Yeah, she's in the 30s, in the upper 30s.
That's right. That's a disaster for her. I don't see how she overcomes that at this stage of the campaign.
And of course, she's done the same thing that Trump has.
That's
she's
right.
Lived in a reality that of her own making,
right?
That doesn't exist in the rest of the state.
Well, maybe she'll go to a senate of her own dreaming, someplace in La La Land.
Who knows?
But what do you think about the fact that Shapiro did not get the nomination? Do you think that Shapiro definitely would have guaranteed Pennsylvania for the Democrats, or do you think that it really doesn't matter?
I think having Shapiro on the ticket would have helped in Pennsylvania, no doubt, in my mind. And he, give him credit, when he wasn't chosen on very short notice, last Tuesday, when because the Harris-Waltz rollout started in Philadelphia, he got up there and introduced them and gave one hell of a speech. It was a barn burner. But that's not what apparently she was looking for. I can see, you know, we didn't know Tim Walz, but you could see where she might have had a more personality comfort with Walz than with Shapiro. But I'm willing to bet that he's going to work like heck for her in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. He understands what the stakes are. He's no dummy.
No, that's right. That's right.
And, yeah. And if he didn't, he would be hurting the party and hurting his future chances.
I think that Wall was a better choice all around. I think that Wall avoids problems that Shapiro brings or could have brought, and he produces strengths that Shapiro didn't have. Whether or not he has a personality that fits in well with Kamala Harris, I have no idea. If that's what she made her decision on, that would have been, I think, foolish. First, you got to get elected.
Right. That's the first job.
That's the first job. And he seems to be making the right kind of speeches. And when they try to attack him for having misrepresented his military service, trying to replay the way they beat Kerry when Kerry ran for president and they attacked his service on the patrol boats, right, the same guy who's running the Trump campaign is the guy who led that, who did that.
Chris LaCivita.
Yeah, LaCivita. And I think it lasted all, the attack on Walz lasted all of one day. I think that he got nowhere with it this time. So yeah, the main problem that they might have had with Walz didn't emerge as a problem. And the strengths that Walz has, they're yet to be demonstrated. But so far, he's a big factor in the fact that there's a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's hard to attack a guy who's got his background and credentials.
Yeah.
But, you know, the important thing is...
And it's hard to attack him when the guy running against them, Vance, is really so peculiar.
Yeah.
And weird, has such weird, horrible yeah. ideas, which he doesn't back away from.
No. No. We'll see when they debate how that contrast comes out. But
you got to remember is that Vance is an intellectual who follows the most reactionary social philosophy of the Catholic Church, which was repudiated by Pope John in the Vatican Council in the 1960s, and which the conservatives and reactionaries in the Catholic Church have been fighting within the church ever since to try to change. And he is the embodiment in American politics of that reactionary point of view.
Well, he's also the embodiment of the Silicon Valley authoritarian point of view, libertarian, which from Peter Thiel, who's his main backer, who has said that he doesn't think we should have democracy anymore.
Exactly. All right. That's it for today.
All right. Next week, who knows?
Next week, who knows? That's the joy of campaigning. Who knows?
And safe travels. We'll stay in touch.
Stay dry.
Stay dry, yeah.
All right. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.